In a world where extreme competition exists everywhere, what does it take to have success in your career and in life? Join me, Nirvana Chaudhary, as I sit down with some of the most successful individuals to discover the secrets to their success, what continues to drive them, and to hear a few exclusive stories in the process, what drives them and their success code, their mantra for making it bigger. Hi everyone, this is Nirvana Chaudhary. I'm back again with my podcast, Making It Bigger. Today I have with me someone from an industry that is so close to my heart. A creative leader, an entrepreneur, a media and an entertainment mogul. Having won a number of awards, he's changing the landscape of how music is listened and projected in our part of the world. Managing director of Universal Music, probably one of the world's largest music labels. Apart from that, I've known Devraj for a while. I think his heart comes from the fact that he's been a musician himself, from his own band Brahma. Heavy metal, coming from that background, leading the entire music industry in our part of the world. I'm just so excited to have you here, Devraj. Thank you so much for making time.
Good to be here, man. It's always good to be here. Like you said, it's something close to your heart, and I know how passionate you are about music, so it's always good fun to talk to a fellow musician about passion and size and scale and the next things that come in our world.
Okay, so the first question that I ask everyone, coming from someone who's been a musician, heavy metal band musician, I know how their mind works, and now coming to leading a fabulous world-class music label and then taking this everywhere, what's individually as Devraj, what's your success mantra? What is it that really drives you?
If you ask most people in the world who run large organizations, I don't think anyone has a singular mantra unless you're like really bright and smart, and maybe I'm not. I think a bunch of things drive me. Excellence really drives me. I mean, nothing pisses me off more than mediocrity. And that's something that's been a thorn in my side from when I was very young. And what happens is, if you can't tolerate mediocrity, as a leader, you make sure that you are as excellent as you can be to set the standard for excellence in your organization, in your circles, in the societies you sit on, in the world that sort of surrounds you. So to me, excellence, and there's a big difference in Nirvana between excellence and perfection, right? I'm not a perfectionist by any stretch of imagination, but I do pursue excellence. I think it drives me. It drives me to be better. It drives organizations to be better, especially in the creative world that I'm in and you're in for some part. Excellence is a great goal to have. So I think that's one key thing that drives me. What else drives success? I mean, to me, innovation is a very bastardized word, and most people use it very sort of loosely. Anything which is different is innovative. No, I think, the ability to think differently, to think, and by differently, I don't mean different for the sake of it. There's this very famous book called, and I'm sure you've read it, and it's a book that I've probably gifted, by now a few hundred copies to people. It's one of the books that sort of made my fundamental mind shift 20 years ago, if not more. It's called The Blue Ocean Strategy. It's by two famous Harvard professors, and it was written 30 years ago. The whole construct was just, if everyone did everything in the same way, the people who actually succeed are the ones who do things differently. Like I said, not for the sake of doing it differently, but they do it differently, they do it smarter, they do it more efficiently, they do it quicker. And they are often able to do the same things better, but more often than not, they're also able to do things that no one thought were possible to do. So to me, innovation, big part of it, excellence, big part of it. And I think personally for me, what is not a success mantra, but what really, really, really drives me is if someone tells me something can't be done, you have to just tell me that, bro, you can't do it. I'll spend my entire night, day, week, month, year to prove you wrong. Not because I want to prove you wrong, but I don't like failure. I don't mind trying really hard and failing, and that really turns me on. Not trying is my problem, right? And I think the problem with more than half the world, and this is not just India and Southeast Asia and our part of the world, it's the entire goddamn world, right? I just think that people don't try hard enough. People aren't motivated enough to try and go 5 degrees more or well beyond the brief to say, You know, I remember 20 years ago, I had this incredible idea, which I was personally excited about. And this is something you know quite well, Nirvana. You were part of it for one part many, many years ago. I said, you know, India, this whole part of the world, in fact, that time even Asia, there's no music festival. And I said, we must do one. It's a great idea. I had this great partner of mine who was my number two in production. And he said, yes, yes, very good idea. We took it to the board. They laughed at me. I took it to the managing committees, you know, who would sanction large amounts of money. And they said, you're stupid. You want to do it? You want to do it in Goa? You want to do it at a time where drugs are rampant in the worst part of the year, which is the most expensive? And to me, I was told it can't be done. Bas, enough. That was all. It ultimately became, go do it if you can raise enough money on your own and you can make it successful. Try it. If you fail, it's good. In the next 2 to 3 years, it became Asia's largest festival. And it set the path to music festivals for not just India or Nepal or Sri Lanka or Southeast Asia or the whole, you know, we set the standard for what music festivals would be. And I remember the first one where there were like 3,000 people to, you know, the last one I exited more than a decade ago, where there were 50,000 people who had bought tickets to come and see the world's biggest artist, right? So to me, I think if you had to put these three things together in some mean way and form the construct of how my brain functions, right? I chase excellence and I really, really, really detest mediocrity. I love innovation in the way that I want to do things differently. And I think the insane ability of never having to give up and the insane ability of saying that no, it must be done and it can be done when the whole world says it can't be done, to succeed in that, that success to me is just beautiful.
It's so
to me, that's the bucket.
It's amazing. You know, you're really sounding like a very dear friend of mine. I don't know if you've been able to catch his documentary on Netflix called 14 Peaks. NIMS, right? I mean, that's exactly what he says, that, you know, and this is the exact word he used. He's like, bro, I just need to be told this can't be done. And that's what he was driven by, and excellence to sort of break that boundary. You better send me a copy of the 100 books that you've distributed as well, right? Okay.
It's true. You know, I tell people this, and I remember very, very early, you know, and there's, I'll just add one more thing, which I think, because it's a conversation about leadership and thinking. It's not a success mantra, but it's a mantra that I try and tell all leaders now who I train to be leaders. I have one rule that I followed in all my companies that I have led, right? I said, and this comes from the fact of trying, even trying and failing, and sometimes trying and succeeding, right? I tell everyone that you try, you fail, it's my fault. You try, you succeed, you succeed. So the fact that if you fail, the sword is not on your neck, but if you succeed, the success is yours. That drives motivation, innovation, integrity, excellence in a way, Nirvana, that I have not seen before. People are willing to take chances when they know that they will not be penalized for trying. You know, most people in the world don't try. Why? Is because they're shit scared of losing their job. They're shit scared of being admonished. They're shit scared of failure. They're shit scared of what their colleagues will think of them, what the industry will think of them. You and I know you know, for a long time, Nirvana, we come from the brand of people where we couldn't give a crap whether we, you know, what the guy next to us said or what our boss said or what somebody else said, because we know at the end of the day, people who try with that, there's a word for it. It's called shiddat. You will understand that. Deep, uninvigorated, unfettered passion. People who do it with that level of, you know, dogmatic solidity, they're the ones eventually who win. Yeah.
So beautifully put, and I couldn't agree more. You know, I know we have, it's a short podcast. So I have one question. I just want to take this conversation so much more forward, learning so much from you already. You know, Devraj, Nepal is so, when it comes to music, right? The youth, which is the majority of our population, it's like, it's inbuilt in our system. I mean, in general, I mean, even if you take the Northeast India belt, you've seen, you know, if, you know, reality shows, music shows, where even you are a judge of one of the most popular shows, The Stage, right? There's this inbred something that sits in our DNA. Now, I get frustrated that, I used to get frustrated saying, why aren't we doing something about it? Why aren't we giving them a platform? But what I've seen over the last 3-4 years is this talent, they write their music. I mean, recording it even in their bedroom or wherever is not a big deal. And they have access to free medium like YouTube, etc. And I'm like, wow, this is great. But where does a music label or a brand like yours fit into all of that? And how is that changing South Asia's landscape?
See, I'll be honest with you. Yeah, and this is something that I've often spoken to the media, especially in the last couple of months at large. The truth of the matter is, Nirvana, that music labels ultimately are businesses. Okay? We are creative businesses, but the underscoring is that we are businesses. And most people who run businesses, unfortunately, are driven by a bottom line. You understand this more than anyone else. The profit and loss of a company is what allows the company to survive. It's what allows the company to, proceed, go ahead, become bigger, invest more money, and so on and so forth. You have to be a company of a certain size to say, I do my P&L, I make sure I'm a highly profitable company, I deliver on KPIs as a region, et cetera, et cetera. But there is a big chunk other than all of this very meticulously driven arithmetic that sits in any business, which is where the creative part of the creative business comes in. You know, labels, like if you ask me, bro, there's an incredible kid from Nepal. I really want to do something with him. I think he's going to be the next big thing. Forget me. If you ask any musician, if you ask any label CEO, their instant answer would be, acha, send me his music. How many Instagram followers does he have? What was the last song? How many million views did he get? And on audio streaming specifically, because that's more valuable than the others. How many streams did he do? Now, the minute you put someone, if you put talent into a measurement box like a P&L, at that minute itself, which is literally within the first 30 seconds of our conversation, you have killed talent. You have made sure 100% that talent is not going anywhere. Correct? Because you've already put it in a box of measurement, and no young emerging talent is ever going to... Which incredible, brand new, unbelievable singer who's just created this masterpiece, who probably is going to become the next Ed Sheeran, is going to come and tell you, bro, I got like 5 million followers on Instagram, and my last song did 400 million views. It doesn't exist. Yeah. The point is, somebody has to take him from zero to the first few hundred thousands to them. So in my business, I'll tell you what we do, and this is very, very applicable to Nepal and Sri Lanka and Bangladesh and all of my markets, is there are always a couple of labels that only work with emerging talent. There is the agenda of not making money. You lose money in that. There is the agenda of going well beyond your normal marketing things that you do for music, and obviously what you do for a Badshah cannot be the same, or a Divine, it obviously won't be the same, for these young kids. So I've got two labels like that. One is a platform called Spotlight, which I have a partnership with a company called Hyundai, who well. It is a place for young talent to come and shine. If we like you, irrespective of which language you sing in, if you are incredible, we will publish you with the full love and respect that a full-fledged musician gets. Okay, so that is one place which is already, we're seeing thousands and thousands and thousands of, are you there?
Yeah, of course.
Oh shit, I'm so sorry. I beg your pardon, I'll edit that out. I lost the screen for a second. So that's one place. The one that I'm really excited about, because India hip hop is becoming this really next language of, culture, and is defining our culture code the way we see it in the future. And, we recently started a young label called Found Out Records. Now, traditionally, you have big heavyweights who run these labels. In Found Out, there are two 22-year-old hustlers who run the label. Because the truth of the matter is, Nirvana, that language, that age, like my son is 23. They're listening to a different kind of music. They're listening to a different artist. Their language is different. When they're talking to us, is not the same that they're talking. So the whole Gen Z, that whole world operates differently. And we should not even claim to try and, understand it, because we won't. Even no matter how cool and young we are, and I'm very young and cool, Nirvana, you know me well, but I don't operate in that world, no matter how hard I try. Yeah. I may know the lingo, I may speak the lingo, but I don't belong there. So there is a label called Founder, and there'll be many such, hopefully, springing up, that does purely emerging talent. So if you don't even have an Instagram account, we are okay. You've never published a song in your life, no problem. But you have sat at the dining table, punched in beats on your knuckles and sung a bar that just blows my mind away, because your lyrics are just unbelievable and your ability to spit is just next level. Come to us, we will do something with you. So that begins to answer the path to where your question will lead, that what will we do with emerging talent in the whole belt of India, South Asia, and so on and so forth. And this logic is the same anywhere, Look at our counterparts in the US. Do you think any of these big superstars were discovered when they were superstars? You should talk to my good friend Scooter Brown. He will tell you the story about Justin Bieber. I saw Billie Eilish being born in front of my own eyes, Nirvana. I saw her when she was a 15 and a half or a 16, not even a 16-year-old kid. She was found somewhere. This good guy, incredible guy called Justin Lavlina, had signed her to this tiny little imprint label. And then she was signed in Interscope. But that was a brand new artist that no one knew. But she came into this leadership conference in Santa Monica that my chairman holds every year. And I tell, there were 80 of us in this little place. And we heard this girl sing. This 16-year-old girl sing Nirvana. And it just blew our mind. We were like, oh my God. Did she have a million people following her? I mean, even though today she may have hundreds of million. No. But they knew that that talent was incredible. And they decided to put the might and the machinery of the world's most powerful label behind this girl. And look at her. Lo and behold, 18 months, 24 months, global superstar. Justin Bieber, global superstar. Selena Gomez, global superstar. Ariana Grande, global superstar. All these stories have come from people who were nothing. And I just think that because of our exposure level, I'll tell you, what really differentiates or differentiated us all this time is that we were not a digital first market. The day we became a digital first market, your question now is moot. You don't even need me. The guy in Nepal sitting in a bedroom making an incredible track that he can put directly through a distribution service into Spotify may get discovered tomorrow and become a world's largest superstar without any of us. Chances are you'll need us because there's a lot of machinery that goes behind making sure you're heard and seen and all of that. But the truth of the matter is the ubiquity, the whole factor has now disappeared because the streamscape is no longer controlled by... It's not like, oh my God, I have a CD, I have to go to Rhythm House. If Rhythm House didn't exist and if Mehmood did not stock my CD, no one would be able to go and buy it and no one would be able to hear me. That day has gone. You can be discovered on SoundCloud, you can be discovered on YouTube, you can be discovered anywhere in several places, right? So to answer your question, the future is incredibly bright. You will see from our part of the world, the same things that happened in the Americas and the Europes and the Frances and the Germanys and the Japan, and I'm talking about the top five, six markets in the world. The same thing is going to happen with us. The same thing is going to happen with us. You will see in the next 5 years, big superstars move out. I mean, I'll tell you, and I can say this now because it's happening. You know that one of the biggest Indian superstars belongs to my family. The first big, sort of seriously big-sized global, let's not call it a collaboration, but whatever you call it, big superstar launch in the world is around the corner. It's a few months away. Now, these kind of things didn't happen a year ago, or 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So even for us, the fact that Indian music of any form, not only in the good old days where only Bollywood was heard and it was only film music, but non-film music. I mean, today, non-film music, and you know that, you know, we're the largest players in non-film music. The amount of non-film music that's going out into the world is unbelievable, and people are loving it. So it's our turn as well. It's our time as well. Follow the same principles of the the success mantras, and we are sure to succeed. I have no doubt.
Devraj, I'm just, you know, I didn't even understand or see from that perspective. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, with more niche record labels coming, language not being a barrier, talent music being what it is, but using that entire machinery what has come and leveraging and help accelerate that is where you come in. It's fantastic. I really, really hope someday, you know, we're able to use that to help promote, give the right platform to musicians even in our own country. No, but thank you.
It's not even very far away, bro. It's around the corner.
But thank you so much. Thank you so much, Devraj. It's such a pleasure to hear from you. I've really, really learned a lot. Trust me. And I'm sure a lot of people who will be listening to will be. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much.
Anytime. It's my pleasure. See ya.